Hey, kids, it's time for
Surf Shorts!
Welcome to the Surf Shorts podcast, an innovator in modern storytelling, looking towards the future, using business terms like radical, off the lip, caught inside, and totally tubular. Surf Shorts, the storytelling podcast, recorded on VHS, then downloaded to cassette for maximum audio quality. It's totally radical.
Surf Shorts, brought to you by the good people at... Oh, it's not crickets anymore, people. Outer Banks Hammocks, brought to you by Outer Banks Hammocks. Outer Banks Hammocks, for the ultimate lay. You can reach them on the internet at obxhammocks.com. They've got all kinds of stuff for you now. Obviously, they have hammocks and swings and chairs, and now they're breaking into outdoor furniture. They've got a lot of outdoor furniture, high-end stuff, Three Birds Casual Teak, Outer Banks Aluminum and Resin Wicker, Polly's Island Durawood, Summer Classics. They've got it all. Hit them up at OuterBanksHammocks.com. That's OBXHammocks.com/outdoor-furniture. Outer Banks Hammocks for the ultimate lay. All right, everyone. Welcome back to Surf Shorts. Today, I'm here with James. What's up, dude?
Hey, my man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for coming back. Really appreciate it. You're full of it. I mean, full of them. Full of good stories. And you've done a lot of traveling and surfing. And we could talk. Spit out some countries.
I mean, well, you know, all over the Caribbean.
Right.
Central America areas. Mm-hmm. And of course, Hawaii, the motherland, man. I've been there quite a few times and love it there. And then California, the other normal places like that. I haven't been to Europe. I really want to go surf France and Spain one day.
Yeah. I have a buddy who wasn't really a surfer, who was working in Ireland and working for a pretty big outfit over there. And they met some people, and they took them and the other people he was working with surfing. And he was like, wanted to talk. He was telling me about it. It's like, oh, it's the most amazing thing. It's like, you wouldn't believe it. I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to go there too, man. I got some pretty thick skin, so I can handle the cold pretty well. So I'd love to do any of those countries over there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But you're definitely Mexico, Costa Rica, Nicaragua.
No, about to the borderline there. Whole Pacific side of Costa Rica and Caribbean side, Baja, California, all over Mexico.
Yeah. Barbados as a kid.
Barbados as a Grom. And then of course, Puerto Rico quite a few times and all around there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you went over, I guess you surfed Salsa Brava then if you crossed over Costa Rica.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's a good wave.
It's cool. But, and the reason I led into that is, we've been talking about surfing, or we're going to talk about surfing, but this particular story isn't just about surfing.
No, it's not. It's really comparing what I think we're trying to figure out, what is the best food you've ever eaten, you know, and is it from a really fancy 4-star restaurant? Is it from the little shack down the road by a surf break? Is it from your grandma? You know, I don't know, but the story kind of revolves around two of my favorite places to eat in the world. One being French Laundry, which is this 3-star Michelin restaurant in Napa Valley, of course, with all the trimmings of the wine country around there.
And now, if the French Laundry is 3 stars, how many stars can you have, and how do you get there? French Laundry is not it.
Truly Michelin is 3. So that's high as it goes.
Okay.
There's other ways to judge restaurants that go higher, but the true, I think, standard is Michelin 3 stars is the highest it can be.
You just educate a lot of people, because I think a lot of people like myself that aren't chefs. I think we're used to the 5-star. That's what we hear. Like, you only got 60% of your stars, Napa. You got to pick it up.
I know. But so that was an incredible experience, and had just a wonderful meal, of course. And then the other one I compared it to was a little shack, like a fight with a fire and a lady that was cooking in there. And it was in a place in Mexico where we called Rio Nexpa. And it was a little village there where you stay and have this incredible Point Break wave. That's just incredible. Good every day.
Yeah. You know, Jimmy Ellington was on the show. He talked about Nexpa and how much they loved it. And we have some other people coming on the show that'll be talking about next. But so this place, you guys were there in the early 90s, right?
Correct. And I think we're all friends, so we all were talking about this place we had to go see. Now, maybe it's the mental-wise, maybe it's wherever it may be, this spot to go to, Nicaragua. But then you had to go to Nexpa.
Did you drive there?
No, no. Flew in, caught a plane, caught another plane where you got on the plane and they handed you a shot of tequila and a beer as you got on the plane and had chickens and roosters running around inside the plane.
Yeah, you're going to need this.
And a cab ride and a train ride and about everything else to get there. But it was worth the effort.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So you did get some amazing waves.
Had a hurricane off the coast there for one stay there, and it was just absolutely incredible. But I always go back to the food there, of course, too. Sure. I love to eat, like I love to surf. And this little lady made this most delicious chicken stew. I ate it about every night for a month. I don't know that food can get any better than what I had there.
So, you know, what is it? What is it that made the food there epic?
Everything, I think, came within a mile probably. And what I mentioned in the book is I think she cooked her mother's food, which her mother cooked her mother's food. And in that area, they have been producing, cooking soul food for 1,000 years.
Yeah. Now in your book, we're talking about a book you just released called Surf and Provision, mm-hmm. right? Which is a cookbook, but also has surf stories in it.
Quite a few surf stories in there and kind of like also some little tips on cooking seafood. And I mean, just a little bit of everything on it.
I enjoyed the part about handling fish. The two parts I really enjoyed that I was ignorant about was handling the fish and storing a fish after you catch it.
That's right. That's right. To preserve the pristine meat. But yeah. But Rio Nexpa, that food, again, was so good because I think she had so much love she put into it and she cared so much about it. And so I really can't decide if the French Laundry, which was about 100 times more expensive than that chicken dish, was better or her food was. But I kind of go back to the lady at Nexpa because the waves were so good as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You're open air.
Yeah, open air, sandy floor. One night we were there. Usually go to bed about 8 there, but I stayed to about 9. And some locals came in, a local farmer, a local fisherman. Of course, they had some unmarked bottle of some type of tequila that was out of this world. And they having a good time. We're trying to translate to each other. And all of a sudden, an armadillo runs into the dining room. So you can imagine the excitement. And I jumped on top of a stool trying to nowhere near it. They grabbed it and I think made tacos out of it.
That's funny. Armadillo tacos. Yeah, I hate you miss those.
I know.
That's something to definitely put on the list to have had. And what else? You said she cooked chicken, obviously fresh fish.
There was fish. Of course, in the morning, there's like some banana pancakes. It was very simple. And just like I said, she smelled like the fire. The fire was always going in there. And just the work she did nonstop and always smiling and never got her name. But just an incredible experience. And that's what, you know, great food, great restaurants to give you an experience, whether it's 100 degrees in a sandy floor or a real fancy, smancy chef-driven place.
I'll show my ignorance here. So this is an open fire over a flat top, like an old-fashioned cast-iron stove deal. But
yeah, I had to peek in there to see as a cook to see how she was cooking all this food. Just one little tiny stove with a fire going up the side of the chimney.
I guarantee you, it crossed your mind for about 30 seconds. Can I make this a restaurant? Could I work this in?
I know. If I can live there, I would have, for sure.
Could I pull this off back at home?
Oh, yeah. No, that would have been the ultimate. But the health department here probably wouldn't have passed the live chickens getting butchered in there and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. They frown on the chicken blood splattering.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So it was a great experience. And again, it's like we were talking, what better thing there is than just surfing with your buddies and friends all day on some good waves, then coming back and just sharing a meal, talking about the wipeouts and the good waves. It's just no better feeling to me.
Yeah. You know, my story like this is was early morning in Costa Rica. And if you had a day that the waves weren't the best or for whatever reason, I was down in Costa Rica on a surf trip and my late wife went with me and we woke up in the morning and we're like, oh, we need some food. We're walking around the small town we're in. I don't want to say the name of it. And you know, it was very uncrowded at the time. It was definitely not a restaurant. There was a bar. There was no grocery store, dirt road. You know the deal.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, such and such will cook for you. Just knock on her door. So we walked around this lady's, you know, house and, knocked on the back door and there's like a little patio just where she had put out some card tables, like metal card tables, right?
Right.
Little things. And
right.
she just seemed annoyed.
Mm.
She reminded me of my great aunt. She's like, pfft, and just kind of waved her hand. She's like, okay. So we sat down and she served us food and the food was excellent.
Mm.
But what I do remember, you know, fresh fruit, rice, eggs,
yeah,
some sort of bread. But what I remember most was she brought a tray, like a dark brown, like a Hardee's tray that had some ketchup and a hot sauce for your eggs or whatever,
right,
and salt and pepper. And it was covered in ants.
No.
And she plopped it down on the table.
Oh, my God.
And just like went poof, poof, and just swept them aside with her hand and knocked the ants off the table. And then just like extended her arms like, here you go.
That doesn't surprise me, you know, but there are edible ants in this world. So maybe she was trying to serve them to you.
Didn't slow us down one bit.
No.
When you're hungry,
you know, and you see good food in front of you, doesn't matter if it's covered in ants.
That's right. That's right. So speaking of food, so this leads us into the really the story here on our show tonight, today. You're out fishing, you're looking for food, and you have a very interesting experience.
Oh, man. Yeah, this is my claim to fame, if you will. It's a little bit wordy. So if you're in your car, just sit back, relax. It'll be good at the end, I promise. But we took a couple buddies out to fish. We were fishing quite a bit in a small little 18-foot center console here off Wrightsville Beach. And this is pre-cell phones and GPSs. So we caught a few king mackerel, maybe one mahi, I think. We're about 18 miles out, and we see a big front to the north of us. So we start rolling back towards where our Loran.
Yeah, Loran.
Kids don't know what those are, but they have these buttons on them and stuff. They tell you where to go. Starting to head back towards the sea buoy of Wrightsville Beach, the jetty. So we start making our way in. I've been fishing quite a bit around here for a long time. And this sheet glass, absolutely sheet glass.
Now, you said you were in an 18 Grady?
18 Parker.
18 Parker. Oh, wow.
Great boat.
How much, I mean, besides having a couple more feet, you couldn't have been better off.
Great boat. Absolutely. Yeah. Swear by him to this day, obviously.
For sure. Yeah.
So anyway, we were rolling back in. We are making good time, and the front just keeps creeping around to where we're heading. You're coming off the land more.
Cutting you off.
Cutting us off basically from, our safe zone there. But so we start seeing lightning. You know, the sky gets that, you know, like skies turn like greenish purple.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, you've seen it, I'm sure. Not a good thing when you're in a boat with no T-top and a lightning starts hitting the water around us. We have the motor pegged, and like we were just going. I said, well, we're going to have to turn through this front. Hopefully it's just a little squall at the end of May. We'll punch through it and be fine.
Yeah. You know, if people haven't been offshore, like, you know, miles and miles offshore, out of sight of land, they might not know how uncomfortable it is to see a front like that come across water, because you are helpless.
Yeah, you really much are. And if you're in a bigger boat, it's no big deal. But when we were exposed, if you will, didn't have much around us except this little boat. So we start going, turning into the storm about a half a mile from it, about 11 miles to go. We hit the squall line, and immediately, there's no wind still. It's just sheet glass.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as we hit the squall line, the rain starts and the wind has gust of 70 mile an hour reported at the Coast Guard station. Little do we know.
Yeah. So 0 to 70.
0 to 70. And it was just so happened so fast. Just we're yelling, hang on, the rain's so hard, I can't even see. And I just try to keep the boat into the wind. And the first wave is about waist high. The second, I get over that, gun it over the next one. Third wave is a little bigger, but it was breaking like a white cap. And the power in that wave, when it hit the bottom of our boat, it basically just threw the boat all the way upside down.
It yawed. So yeah.
We held on. I was holding on to the steering wheel, and it was, boat was just coming over me, just like you can see in the video, but coming straight over my head. One frame went one way, one frame went the other way. And
it's like you're trying to paddle over a big wave and you just didn't quite make it, and you're going backwards over the falls.
Yes, exactly. That's what we did. And you know, lightning is hitting everywhere. It's just total chaos. The wind is blowing so hard you can't even believe it. I opened my eyes underwater and I'm watching the rods and the reels. Everything's sinking. I knew the Loran said 10 miles to go, so I knew we were about 10 miles out when this happened. And I just opened my eyes and felt a calm, because whenever I'm surfing in the big waves and I'm underwater, to me, it always feels calming.
It's quiet.
Yeah, it's quiet, and just almost kind of like didn't want to come up. So I came up on one side, and the one friend was there, but my other friend was missing. But he came from the other side of the boat, thank goodness. We were all just yelling, just hang on to the boat. And back to the Parker is full of flotation.
Yeah.
Because it happened so fast, we couldn't get life jackets out or anything yet.
Is the motor running?
No, the motor died by then.
Okay.
And was starting to kind of leak out some oil, and the bait, it all floated out and all that good stuff. And we just held on for about an hour during the storm to the side of the boat that was upside down.
Yeah. So the boat is broached. It's upside down. The yeah. V, correct me if I'm wrong, I would imagine the bow of the boat is what's above the water. And, you know, it's, you're inverted, and the Parker's going to have a lot of V.
Mm-hmm.
So the stern probably is under the water. Is that right?
Correct. The stern yeah. just below the water, about as much as yeah. your table here is the V sticking out of the top.
Right.
So once the storm subsided, I think it had gone northeast at about 15. So it got a little chilly. So I dove down and got the life jackets out of the center console, kind of one at a time. My other friends didn't surf much. They weren't really used to all this
yeah.
you know, water yeah. time. So I got them out. And then I was trying to get to the flares. And you know,
yeah.
where do you put your flares? Always in the very bottom of your center console or in the bottom of yeah. it, just a locker somewhere. So I couldn't get to the flares. So the front had blown through. Meanwhile, uh-huh. We had our boat on the ICW. My parents were going to go to a movie. Knocked the storm had knocked the power out in Wilmington, most of the Wilmington. Trees were knocked down. It was really a serious storm. So we hung on for a while, got on the V of the boat, and we had to sit on our life jackets because the V was so pointed.
Yeah.
It just kills your butt.
So, yeah, would have to, yeah. especially with the undulations of the ocean.
Yeah.
You're a sailor, mm-hmm. and I'm a sailor. Mm-hmm. Did it? I'm sure that it crossed your mind. Hey, let's flip this thing over somehow. Did you give it a shot?
I wish we could have. It's just too big.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was full of water on the inside of the hull there, so yeah. it really made it problematic to try to flip it over if we had some way to do it. I really wasn't thinking. I knew the motor's probably shot as well because it was
yeah.
full of water.
Oh, yeah. I knew it wouldn't flip over. I was imagining you like, all right, let's give it a shot. You guys get over there.
Anything to just yeah, get yeah. it back over for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a good point. And we sat there and rocked, and we get washed off. And by then it's dark.
Mm.
And we're sitting there hanging on each other, and we'd get washed off and climb back up. We would sit there a little more and talk about how cold we were and what's yeah. going on.
And this is May, so it's not yeah. warm.
It wasn't super warm. And then I think about 1:30, we heard a helicopter flying. So they must know that we're missing. Obviously, my parents probably called in the Coast Guard. We hadn't come back from fishing yeah. in this bad storm. So we were getting excited. Okay, well, shoot, we'll be picked up probably in no time. And then we start seeing big navigation lights on big boats that are coming out from one direction.
Oh, you're stoked.
We were picked up, man. No problem. But no, we sat there and getting washed off, and later in the night it gets, and later. And finally, I don't remember what time it was, maybe 3:30. I see all the boats going back one direction.
Yeah.
And I see don't hear the helicopters kind of getting, you know, faint and faint. So it was going back home. And so we knew there for the night.
Yeah. You know, you hear a lot of stories about people that have been lost at sea, or you only hear from the survivors, right?
That's a lesson for the day right there.
It is. Yeah. yeah. But that's a theme. Like I saw someone looking for me, mm-hmm. and I couldn't get their attention.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
It'd have to be a sinking feeling.
Yeah, man. I mean, so the next morning we said, well, daybreak comes, we're going to be found. I think you have to have that optimistic,
yeah,
you know, thought process to get through something like this. Because, I mean, it was pretty bad when lightning was hitting everywhere. We were pretty shaken, especially the guys I was with who weren't used to being in some big water.
It is a big difference. Yeah. I mean, like, for sure, if you don't surf, it's very different.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a surfer and you're submerged in the water as waves, like, wow, this is what I do.
Yeah. I'm not just don't panic, right?
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, we had sat there over in the night, the daybreak, sun starts rising, and we still couldn't see land overnight, obviously. But the next morning, we'd gotten blown kind of towards land, so we could kind of make an outline of land. And the
But you didn't know what land it was.
At that point, not really, yeah. no. I was yeah. thinking we couldn't have gone that far. But we daybreak's here. We're going to see. I see a plane, the Coast Guard plane with a big disc on the back. Saw mm-hmm. that. Saw boats that I knew who they were looking for us.
Yeah.
I mean, just buzzing around. within a mile sometimes. But when you're going, sitting on that boat, going up and down, you disappear because there was still probably two or three foot seas.
Yeah. And you don't have a flare.
Yeah. I don't have a flare. I try to shine my watch on the MacGyver it a little bit to someone to see the flash.
Or, does anyone have any gum?
Yeah. And duct tape. And we wave life jackets at boats we would see.
Sure.
Nothing. God. Nothing. So the morning turns into midday and we're still bobbing along out there. The oil by then from the motor while I was in the water getting the life jackets had burned up my eyes and my shoulders and stuff. And we were just sitting there waiting and waiting for someone to pick us up. By 2 or 3, whatever it was in the afternoon, we could see the south end of Masonville Island.
You could tell that was it.
A mile and a half maybe away, 2 miles. And I told my friends, we're going to swim there.
Yeah.
We're abandoning the boat. I'm going to get to that beach because we're so cold, and want to get off this boat.
Yeah.
And plus, we're traveling south, so maybe it could have washed around the corner at the shoals down there. Who knows?
Oh, Lord, yeah.
So anyway, our friends are, you're going to make it. Just put your life jacket on and we'll swim. Take your time. You can do this. So we started swimming, and I don't know how long it took to get in there, maybe an hour or something like that, a swim, and came in down there at the south end of Masonboro.
Did you warm up swimming?
A little bit, yeah. By then, my adrenaline was going too. Am I ready to get on land?
Yeah. And you're like stoked because you're like, I'm going to live. Like, you know you're going to live at this point.
Yeah.
Which was in doubt earlier.
Yeah. And so we finally, they all get behind me a little bit to the beach. We roll in the sand because it's been baking in the sun and we're just sunburnt by then too. But it felt so good.
Oh, yeah. I think every surfer has like been frozen and laid down on some hot sand.
It feels like the best ever.
Yeah.
So, but meanwhile, the boat did wash in down, follow down to Carolina Beach area, and they called in the boat with no survivors.
Now, did the boat beat you to land?
So it actually did, technically, but in a lot of different places after all that.
Yeah.
Well, we were on
land. Oh, I know. Yeah.
But we might have been, so it washed in down there. And then we decided we needed to make a way to the ICW.
Right, because you've got to
picked up.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know the geography of our area. Mm-hmm. So you hit the south end of this barrier island, seven mile long. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Yeah, you hit the south end of this uninhabited barrier island. So, I've had this thought many times on Masonboro, like, oh, if I was a pirate and I got to land, I'd be stoked. But then I'd be like, this place sucks because there's bugs and it's cold.
true. It is. It's a beautiful island and some great waves, but it's not great to wash in on because of, for our instance, we got through a salt marsh of about 200 yards.
Yeah.
Into these giant oyster beds we had to cross.
So you're crossing the island from the ocean side, hiking over. You got to cross some marsh and there's just to get to the waterway.
The waterway is where the most boat traffic is. And that's where we'd figure we could get picked up. Beyond that, then there's some apartments and homes and things across that.
Yeah. So. When you told me you could see the south end of Carolina Beach, I was worried because I'm like, oh, these dudes are going to be swimming there and they'll be at the south end. The tide's going to go out and the river's going to push this dude push them right back out.
True. Yes, that could definitely have happened. We had traversed across this salt marsh and oyster beds in about 4:30 or 5 that afternoon. The next afternoon, we got picked up by the small Coast Guard boat.
So by 4:30 or 5. So you cross now. Crossing an oyster bed is no easy. How did you cross this oyster bed?
I taught the guys how to put what's it called? Starfish when you paddle over a reef.
Right.
Really shallow.
Right.
So you spread your arms and legs out and just do little pitter pat paddles.
Yeah.
But we were still getting cut up on our knees and hands because it was about 6 inches deep.
Yeah.
And it's about 200 yards of it. So
oh my gosh.
It was just like a never ending battle to get picked up.
Yeah. And there's no way to walk around it. It's so big.
No, it's so big. And it's just that down there, that's all it is.
So you're on the back, you're waving people down. Who saw you?
Well, the Coast Guard was patrolling and they happened to be running by and said, are you the guys that are missing? And we're like, yes. And they were like, we found y'all. I'm like, no, we found you. We have been swimming and climbing through oyster beds to get to where we are. So, but it was good. And then we got picked up there.
You're like, don't get me wrong. We'll take a ride.
Yeah. Don't let's hand us some nice wool blankets, just to scratch your skin up a little more. And, so that was in the process of building my fine dining restaurant I had at that time, fancy restaurant. And everyone wanted to know about that story, not the food that I was going to
Yeah, we need the chef to come to the table. Oh, did you enjoy your food? So tell us about
Yeah, that was exactly what happened for the first like 4 years.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, man, I mean, not everybody has a lost at sea.
No. And you know, it was funny. There wasn't much going on in the world, I guess. So USA Today covered it. They had our pictures all in there, and they had the story. And so I got letters from retired Navy officers saying great job to take care of their crew and the ship and all this kind of stuff, and spoke at Rotary meetings. And
all oh, that's this cool.
People are just fascinated by it. And, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, when I first heard the story, I imagined that you had pearled into a wave and gotten swamped and foundered and it rolled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't realize that you went over backwards.
Totally over backwards. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just the force of the wind, I think, is all it was, just to blow us right over.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing you can do, you know, unless you nowadays, and with hindsight, maybe you could turn around and run out to sea and just sort of let the seas chase you a little bit. But then again,
you never know. You're rolling the dice. I thought about going to Carolina Beach and like kind of more south of where we were to get around it, just to get in the waterway. But by then it was just completely on us. So moral of the story is check your weather before you go out in a small boat.
Yeah. Amen. That is the truth. Well, thanks, man. I really do appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, man, it's been a blast. And again, I'll be coming back anytime. Let me know.
All right. Thanks, brother.
All right, man.
Surf Shorts Podcast.
All right, y'all, listen. I say surf, you say shorts. Surf.
Shorts.
Surf.
Shorts.
I say, wait a minute. I think that pretty much covers it.